rise for their majesties of Royally Obsessed, the podcast for all things royals.
Three cheers for His Majesty the King.
Welcome back to another episode of Royally Obsessed. I'm Roberta.
And I'm Rachel.
Before we dive into all the royal news this week, follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast. Also send us a note, info@gallerypodcasts.com. Rachel, it's so good to see your face.
Always, always. It's like the best time of the week. And we have like some fun get-togethers planned for tomorrow, which I can't wait to talk about. So
I can't wait.
I know. But we have a lot that we're discussing on a fairly run-of-the-mill, I will not say the Q word, which I loved. There was a Facebook debate about what the Q word means. And I still will not say it here, but I think some Roros answered the question for those that were asking. But so it's kind of like I'm calling it run-of-the-mill week, but we are going to be discussing Scoop, which both of you and I finally had the chance to watch. We are flashing back to Diana and Charles' Australia tour, 1983. We are also talking about Sophie and Edward stepping up and out this week, really holding down the fort along with Anne and Camilla. So many people filling the gap right now. But all that coming up, Roberta, I'm so excited to discuss it all with you.
And now it's time for the weekly royal cocktail.
All right, to get through all of that, our royal refreshment this week is very special because we are meeting up in New York City tomorrow.
I know. I cannot wait, Roberta. I am like very excited to see you. We have a really important occasion, which was shared on our Royally Obsessed Instagram account. But Royally Obsessed, thank you, Amazon Music, is featured on a billboard in Times Square. We have to see it in person.
The big bright lights. I'm so excited to see it in person with you. And for our royal refreshment, we are getting afternoon tea at the Crosby. So that will be such a delight to catch up over tea.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And all the miniature sandwiches.
But before we get into the royal news this week, Rachel, I wanted to ask about your solar eclipse experience. How was it?
I mean, it was very, very lovely and wonderful. I was on assignment during it. I was just sharing with you and our producer that I inadvertently scheduled a work commitment at 3 p.m. on Monday, really right when it was happening. Actually, I think I moved it to 3:30. And so I was crossing like Madison Avenue on the Upper East Side right when everyone was seeing it, the moon in front of the sun. So it was still exciting. And I was able to like share my eclipse glasses with a bunch of people because some people didn't buy them and I worried about eye safety. But it was really special and fun. How about you?
Oh, it was fine. I mean, with being in Florida at my parents' house, it was 70% totality. So it wasn't really that dark. It didn't ever get that dark. It was pretty bright out, but it still was really cool. And I did the colander trick and there were a lot of people. I ran some errands kind of similar to you, like around that same time. And people were, I could see them outside looking up at the sun with their glasses and stuff. Yeah. Did Finn enjoy it? Did he see it?
I told you my sad story where accidentally on Friday, bad mom moment. I hate to call myself out for this, but I was distracted and I was doing two things at once and he had learned about it at school. And then I said, he was like, but mom, why can't I look directly at it? And I was like, you'll burn your eyes out. And I just said it so flippantly. And aww. I did feel like it was a good idea to instill a healthy amount of fear, but I instilled too much fear.
Too much.
He was very scared. But he was also in school, and school had some restrictions there. I mean, the kids didn't have glasses, so they were really inside during it. But he got excited after, and I showed him some videos, and he understands it better. But he was really nervous, and it's all my fault. So I'm saying it here. Was a mistake, but it was...
I can relate to Finn in that way because I was definitely very scared to burn my eyes out.
Yeah. But I did want to just add is that I felt like one exciting part of being like in Manhattan for it and making myself go out to the work thing, because I would have just been working from home, was it is a moment where I feel like everyone comes together. And those happen so infrequently. And it just felt so special. Like we were all unified, looking up at the sky. And I do want to shout out, Roberta has a deep, deep love of planetary. Like, she is royally obsessed.
She also likes
celestial happenings. And so I was texting with her about that, too, because it's one of my favorite characteristics of Roberta. And so it was a special day for you.
It's such a random interest that I have, but I do, like, I nerd out over these things. And I agree. I read something about how, you know, a lot of the earthly things that are occurring are very scary, like climate change and extinction. And it's always kind of bad news. And then to have this thing that's really kind of, like you said, unifying and exciting and and thrilling, and that we all come together. It's just like, it's really a nice change for once. So
yeah, it was really a special afternoon.
I know you're probably planning your next eclipse, solar eclipse trip.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. Everyone's like, that's what everyone's doing. I see everyone setting calendar invites and like where they're going to travel to. I mean, hey, throw it on the calendar. You never know where life will take you.
We were just talking about Egypt and the pyramids.
Yes,
and
how Iceland cool would that and be? All these places.
Gosh. Yeah. All right. Well, should we move on to our listener email?
Yes, let's dive right in. This was a really wonderful one to dig into from Angela. She wrote, I've been a listener to your podcast since March and April 2020. That was right when we took over. So thank you for that. And really look forward to your takes on the British royals. And I love the royal refreshments. This week's discussion on Meghan's launch of American Riviera Orchard, I agree, she says, it's a mouthful, led me to think about other royals who have done commercial ventures. Roberta asked a question that I believe a lot of people are thinking about with ARO, is Meghan cashing in on her royal connections? I then remembered Fergie and Princess Michael of Kent have published books using their royal titles, and King Charles started the Duchy Originals brand, which I believe is a for-profit. Can you share your thoughts on this? How are they different? And thank you for the great work you do. God save the pod, she ends with. So I really enjoyed researching this. Roberta gave me an assist as well. But from what I understand, senior full-time working members of the royal family cannot do anything in the commercial realm for funds. So that really specifically applies to Charles, Camilla, Kate, and William. With the examples that Angela shared, she talked about Fergie and Princess Michael of Kent, but both are not senior working royals. And in the case of Fergie, she was divorced in 1996 when she published her memoir, My Story. Also, Budgie the Helicopter threw me for a loop because I did remember that Fergie wrote a children's book series, and some people report it as happening in the 90s post-separation, but the books did publish in the late 80s originally, but the asterisk there is that Fergie made a pledge to donate part of the proceeds to charity, so even if it was a profitable venture, that charitable tie is where they get the pass. The TV series that came later did make Fergie a significant amount of money, but it happened post-separation and divorce. I think what's also interesting when you go back and read some of the coverage, like the Washington Post has a really good article, it really makes clear, and you see the parallels back to the 90s, where Fergie got a ton of heat for exploiting her royal title. So it feels like it's just a conversation that's as old as time, but there are clear, I guess, like rules that have been spelled out by the Queen and in their sort of, I guess, can I call it legislation? Not really legislation.
Yeah. I think too, for Meghan, the distinction with senior working royal is that of course they are not that anymore.
They are not. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the restrictions are in place specifically for the senior working royals, but Eugenie, Beatrice, Kitty Spencer, Zara, Mike, that doesn't apply to them. They are allowed to work. They are allowed to have commercial ventures. And I did also want to touch about King Charles because Angela mentioned that and the Duchy Originals line. All the profits from that go to charitable causes. In 2019, that amounted to $35 million. So it is interesting to dig into this. And I enjoyed the research project with this listener email.
I love it. Thank you so much, Angela.
And now, This Week in Royal History.
All right, This Week in Royal History. Diana and Charles and baby William are in the midst of a 6-week-long Australia and New Zealand tour. So we're flashing back to April of 1983. Hard to believe it's been over 40 years since that gigantic tour took place.
Oh my God, just hearing you say that, that's staggering.
41 years, I know.
I always think of the 80s as yesterday. That's like my own limitation of time, but that's fascinating.
Okay, my limitation of time is that the 2000s are 10 years ago.
Yes,
that's
yes.
Where it's like, that's less dramatic, but I do feel like when someone says like 2008, it's like, oh, that was 2 years
yeah.
ago. It's so strange.
It's fascinating.
So we know that this tour was dramatized in The Crown season 4. The episode was called Terra Nullius, means no man's land in Latin. It's definitely a loaded phrase, Terra Nullius. Nearly 200 years earlier, Great Britain used the concept to justify colonizing Australia, claiming the land was unclaimed and unpopulated, despite its, of course, Aboriginal population. So definitely a phrase with a lot of baggage. Of course, this was Princess Diana and Prince Charles's first overseas tour together as a married couple at a time when Australia was experiencing a huge wave of Republican sentiment. The Prime Minister went on TV to talk about how they might not have King Charles as king when he eventually became king before the tour even began. And they decided to bring baby Prince William along. He was 9 months old and the first royal baby taken overseas. This is huge for them.
Such a great decision, too.
But what a grueling trip this was. 6 weeks, 30,000 miles, 8 engagements a day on some days.
Yeah.
The press really loved Diana, though. The excitement around the visit was described on par with Beatlemania. Some highlights for me, the peak 80s fashion. Rachel, you can click that link and scroll through some of those images of the pink and the lace and the hats. And oh my gosh, the puff sleeves. Of course, Prince Charles at one moment kissed her hand in public, which people really loved. The couple danced to Can't Take My Eyes Off You by Frankie Valli at a charity ball. Diana wore the Spencer tiara multiple times. And of course, that was her wedding tiara. And then this lovely radio show appearance with children asking them questions. Here's a clip of that.
The question there was, has Prince William a little bike yet?
Sorry.
Yes.
Stephen, he hasn't got one yet. We think he's a bit small. But perhaps when he's your age and size, we might get him one.
Thank you very much. Jamie Smith out at Ayers Rock, you have a question. Does Prince William have a favourite toy?
Jamie, he loves his koala bear he's got. But he hasn't got anything particular. He just likes something with a bit of noise.
It's a plastic whale that throws things out the top.
He got a plastic whale that throws things out the top, little balls.
Thank you. Jamie, I hope that answers your question.
Oh my God, that's so charming.
So sweet. I know. And her and Charles kind of whispering the answers to each other before they decide on what to say. Really a lot of highlights of this trip, but also some lows. Princess Diana burst into tears in the back of a motorcade amidst all those crowds in Sydney. She also can't hike up Ayers Rock. This is shown in The Crown, and it says that it's because she's tired and exhausted and jet-lagged. But really, the press, when they wrote about it and covered this moment, they said she was trying to keep her dress from flying up the whole time and the buttons closed because her petticoat was showing, her knees were showing. So that might have been the real reason. There's also a bunch of stories being published in the news right before they land in Australia about the rumors of her eating disorders.
Wow.
They reported when she was there that she's sunburnt. She's also a bit tired. And reminder, Princess Diana is only 22 at this moment with a 9-month-old. I mean, it's like I can't even fathom what she's going through at this moment.
It's staggering, the pressure and, yeah, spotlight.
And she talked about that press attention in her Panorama interview with Martin Bashir in 1995. I couldn't find the exact quote because, of course, we know there's been a lot of pressure to try to hide the full interview from the public. But the quote that she says that she tells Martin Bashir is, "We'd be going around Australia, for instance, and all you could hear was, oh, she's on the other side. Now, if you're a man like my husband, a proud man, you mind about that if you hear it every day for 4 weeks. You feel low about it instead of feeling happy and sharing it." With the media attention came a lot of jealousy. A great deal of complicated situations arose because of that, she said.
It's so sad.
Marriage troubles, just a preview of what's to come there. I did want to say for this week in royal history, an honorable mention, because holy Tuesday, yesterday, we're recording this on Wednesday, and yesterday there were so many big royal moments. Of course, the Queen Mother's funeral, a sad one on April 9th, 2002. Camilla and Charles's 19th wedding anniversary was yesterday. April 9th, 2005 is when they got married. And Prince Philip passed away 3 years ago on April 9th, 2021.
Wow, what a significant day.
Yeah, totally.
I wonder how Charles and Camilla celebrated.
I know, we didn't get a new picture.
Yeah, hopefully some walks around Highgrove or something like that.
Yes.
All right, moving on. We want to talk about Scoop. We finally watched it. What were your initial thoughts, Roberta? Reviews and reactions.
My review is that the actors did so well. I really loved Gillian Anderson in her role as Emily Mattlis, and I loved Rufus Sewell. I mean, that bathtub scene, I had full body cringe, like full body cringe as he gets out naked and watches the interview.
I actually saw some of our listeners posting just like disclaimers for anyone watching being like, this is the time code when you see like his little derriere for a second and just warning, like this should be a warning. But I think it was like that kind of commitment to the role that made it so excellent.
Yeah, and I think Billy Piper did a good job as Sam McAllister, too. Just all around, the actors were really, really impressive. I will say that it was more of a workplace procedural, I'm doing air quotes there, than I expected. I didn't think that it would be so much about just the newsroom ins and outs, which I think you and I, Rachel, really love. But I think for some other people, it might be a little boring. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it did feel like just a straight retelling. And I think that was something that struck both of us, where there wasn't a lot of editorialization. And Andrew almost comes off a little bit okay because that's missing. Whereas mm-hmm. you and I, because we like these newsroom dramas, have seen things like Spotlight and, you know, She Said with Carey Mulligan and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think the power of those two films, and especially with Spotlight, what won it so many awards was that editorialization, I guess, for lack of a better word, you know, the explanation of what this led to, why it was so impactful and huge and all of that.
Well, I think too, like with Spotlight, which I'm so glad you called that out because that's one of my favorites, Mark Ruffalo and Rachel McAdams. But I think too with that, it's like it's revealed the wrongdoings of those Catholic priests and cardinals and everything afterward. But with Andrew's settlement, it's really, I feel like it's all still so secretive, and we have Virginia Giuffre's account, but they don't really dramatize that for the screen. And I'm wondering if that's because of certain legalities there. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure why it wasn't really addressed. There were like some looks exchanged at the end of the interview too, but I think even as royal watchers, we watched the original interview and knew how impactful and the implications of what he was saying, and how I felt like it kind of cut off or something. And he was like, well, that went well and that went well. And that's obviously what he accurately said, but it just didn't add to why that was significant.
I agree too that they kind of go easy on him a little bit. And we do see the victims, like that shot of the one brunette girl coming out of the apartment, Jeffrey Epstein's apartment in New York. But I don't feel like they do enough to center them that much in the story. I think it's more about the BBC, yeah, which I kind of had a problem with.
Yeah. I will say that I do love a newsroom thriller, and the negotiations part of it was so exciting. I just feel like all of this just demonstrates the merit of old school reporting and like investigative journalism and just kind of that mm-hmm. hunt for the story and mm-hmm. how exhilarating those jobs, our jobs even, can be when you're just like on the precipice of something, you know, so earth shattering. And it's not clickbait. You're not making it up. It's really accurate reporting. So I think that that was fun to watch. And I do also think the person that played Amanda Thirsk, his communications person, mm-hmm. she was great. I really liked her, and I felt like it kind of demonstrated the role of palace PR. And
do you know who she's married to?
Oh no, I don't.
Matthew McFadden, who is Tom Wamsgans in Succession, but also Mr.
It
Darcy.
Makes sense. I like how it portrays the behind the scenes of palace PR and the limitations of that too. So that was fun to see.
Yeah, I like too the subtleties of the talent booker versus the actual like journalist doing a lot of the writing and the grunt work. And then, you know, that is, I feel like that is real. Like there are these positions where Sam shows up at 11, but she has all the contacts and she makes the call to Buckingham Palace. It just was really interesting. But I think with Amanda Thirsk, I felt like the reactions were sort of dry. Like there wasn't a lot of emotion. We didn't get a lot of the behind the scenes of her feelings toward Andrew.
Yeah, they could have showed more of her role. Yeah. But it did seem like she was almost limited in that sense by the player, which is Andrew, and how he really runs the show ultimately. Oh, but a fun watch. I mean, it made me so excited for how they're going to treat the same subject in a very royal scandal, which I guess production kicked off in November. So the prediction is that we'll see that on Amazon Prime later this year. And of course, we talked about last week that stars Ruth Wilson, Michael Sheen. I mean, heavy hitter. So I can't wait. Also, just had to shout this out that, of course, all attention on how Andrew might be feeling this weekend with the arrival of Scoop and all this being back in the headlines. We did get an Andrew sighting. He was spotted almost running over a dog his Range Rover at Windsor. I feel like obviously the cameras catch that moment. You can click that picture. He's laughing because the owner is then running circles around the Range Rover and can't find the dog. But imagine if he did hit the dog. Just the PR for that guy is just, I mean, he should have just stayed inside, probably.
I just can't stop thinking about the bears in that scene where he's yelling at
Kate Winslet's daughter,
the maid who's arranging. Okay, see, I didn't know that that was Kate Winslet's daughter. What a breakout role!
Yeah, huge. That was like a that was a scene stealing.
She
part actually, of the movie.
Yeah, she did a really good job with the emotion and and everything. That other retelling of the events of Very Royal Scandal, that's with Emily Matlis's backing. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Interesting. So there's like two different camps here.
Yeah,
two different perspectives, because there has been a lot of, you know, calling out of just like, was with this scoop, the movie, was it too much Sam McAllister's perspective? It was obviously based on her memoir. So you're going to have that version of events, but we'll get Emily's with the next one.
Yeah, I think there was some controversy over whether she took too much credit or not enough or whatever. So
worth a watch. I'll say anyone here that hasn't seen it yet, definitely make the time. And it's only about 90 minutes. It wasn't long.
Yeah, it was quick. I flew through it on Netflix. So okay, our second bit of news is Sophie and Edward stepping up and stepping out. On Monday, the Duke and Duchess of Edinburgh attended the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace on behalf of the king to commemorate the 120th anniversary of the Entente Cordiale. Okay, we're going to back up for a second. The Entente Cordiale, excuse my pronunciation, it's probably not correct.
I think you're nailing it, yeah.
was a diplomatic agreement on April 8th, 1904, between Britain and France that laid the groundwork for the two nations' cooperation in both world wars. It was really interesting, too, that at the same time this changing of the guard happened with both the French and the UK regiments, it happened in Paris at the Elysee Palace with the UK guard. So that was really cool that they had a simultaneous kind of event in both countries. The Duchess of Edinburgh was wearing a Max Mara sand-colored coat, which is a repeat, but a new Roland Murray bow dress in light blue. So, so stunning. What did you think of this look?
I mean, I think Sophie has really been killing it with fashion. Also, I mean, Edward has been like lots of tailoring, just looking pretty stylish to me.
The pinstripes don't age him too much. That's my take.
Yeah, I guess it is a dated look, but it's kind of vintage feeling for me. I don't know, because the tailoring's so good. I'm into seeing them more, you know, fashion forward.
The only thing I have to say, I was a little upset because there's a beautiful bow on the shoulder, very similar to Kate's yellow Roxanda dress, I believe, that is hidden underneath the coat and she never takes the coat off. So I feel like that was a little bit of a miss. I included a link for you to just check that out.
Okay.
She, of course, looks so, so regal, though. But I can't think of how I feel with this event versus if it were the Prince and Princess of Wales. Like, I feel a little bit low energy about it. Even if it were Charles and Camilla, I think I'd have a little bit more excitement.
Yeah. It doesn't get the same media attention with their participation, which is sad. You know, I think that I didn't see a ton of headlines about it, even with the historical significance of it.
The king wasn't there. He was actually spotted at a church in Sandringham on Sunday. So he's definitely laying low. 1 week since Easter, he was out and about at church again. William is out of office till April 17th. Is that right? Their Easter break lasts for a while.
Well, I think I can't confirm that, but it is the Lanbrook school calendar. So I would assume that that's when their break will end and we'll likely start to see him again. But that's what the schedule says. We did see those banknotes of King Charles that will, you know, a preview of them, which will be out in June. So that's something to look forward to. They'll start circulating.
Yeah, he went back to the palace. I believe that was yesterday. We're recording on Wednesday. Yeah. So I did want to ask before we move on to our highs and lows, did any of our listeners snag tickets to Balmoral for this July and August? That is huge that they are selling tickets. They sold out within 24 hours, supposedly. It's the first time that much of Balmoral will be open to the public. But previously, it was just the grounds and one room inside the castle. So this is huge. The castle was completed in 1856. The tickets are very pricey. They're $126 per person. I think that's expensive. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's just average. But
can you put a price on a tour of Balmoral? I don't know.
The plaid carpet is what I would like be taking so many shoe selfies of. You can also add on an afternoon tea for $62, which brings the total up to around $200. And these sold out in 24 hours. They're bankrolling.
These are Disney World prices, Roberta.
I really want to know if any of our listeners got tickets. So let us know. Also, Rachel, you're going to London and we need to hear all about it. Did you get Buckingham Palace tickets?
I know I haven't shared this. So I am going to London in 2 weeks' time. This is such a last minute trip, but Matt is heading over for work. And I do feel a little bit like you know, I keep thinking about how when we were there at the coronation, it obviously won't be the same trip. I'll be doing so many kid things because Finn is coming. But I am excited to have less work pressure while there because we were so scheduled. I mean, we were up at like 4 a.m.
Oh, we were running around town like chickens with our heads cut off.
So I don't have like the itinerary in the way that we did during those few days. But yes, I want to shout out Visit Britain that was able to score me a single ticket to go and tour Buckingham Palace while I'm there. And I am just so excited. I can't wait. And I'm excited to do things like from a kid perspective. Like I said, like the Princess Diana Memorial Playground. I've never gone there. I haven't had a reason. And so I'm going to take Finn. And it's a double whammy because he's so into Peter Pan after Disney World. And it's a Peter Pan theme, I realize, the playground. So it's perfect.
Oh, selling I'm him on so excited for you. I'm going to book my ticket and join soon.
I know. Seriously, come in my suitcase. It won't be the same without you.
I will say, though, you're going to Buckingham Palace at the perfect time because supposedly they've opened up that east hallway and west hallway and they lead to the balconies. So you might be able to go stand where the royal family is.
No, it says you can't stand on the balcony.
You can look out.
Remember when we were at the Kensington Palace art exhibit and we were trying to like peek through the curtain. The curtains are all drawn, remember? And they were like, maybe they said it to us or we saw someone in front of us get scolded about it, but they were like, do not open the curtain. We're like, we just want the view.
I hope that you try to go out on the balcony though. And
I'll just like make a break for it. No, I'm very excited. I will make you laugh. Also another mom fail. I was like, Finn, you and I are going to go to Buckingham Palace. And then it was like, oh, you have one ticket. And I was like, just kidding. Mama's going to Buckingham Palace. I'm like the worst. Because he's really excited about the British Guards, which makes sense. Like that seems like a really fun thing. It's fun for me, but for a kid too.
Oh gosh, so. I'm sure he's going to love that.
Yeah.
It's time for the Royal Highs and Lows.
Before we adjourn the Royal Pod, our highs and lows. My low is just that we haven't seen anything from American Riviera Orchard. My prediction was April 7th was when we would get an announcement about the products that will be sold, just because that was the anniversary from 2017 that the TIG shuttered. I felt like that would be very meaningful. And Megan picks dates that are symbolic for them in some way. So it's just my low is kind of where is ARO? I just want to know.
Yeah, we're ready.
They're selling me what I'm supposed to be buying.
And potentially it was planned for April 7th and then just got delayed based on the news cycle with the family too. Who knows?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, we'll see. My low is this breaking story that Peter Phillips has broken up with his girlfriend, Lindsay Wallace. They were together for 3 years. We saw them, you know, she obviously met the royal family. She attended Royal Ascot, the coronation concert, Wimbledon. So they are done. Apparently, it's the reason is being cited that they just haven't been able to spend enough time together with work and family commitments. But she is a close friend of Zara's, so I'm sure there'll be overlap still. But womp womp. Sorry, Peter.
Oh, this is sad. I didn't see this. Ugh.
Yeah.
My high this week is Prince Harry is supposedly appearing today, although we're recording before he shows up, at the Better Up Summit. It's called Uplift by Better Up. It's a 2-day summit. It's on Wednesday and Thursday of this week. So tomorrow when our episode airs, we will definitely have seen him by now. There are other speakers, Mindy Kaling, Brené Brown, Tracee Ellis Ross, to name a few of the high profile names. I'm excited for Harry to be in the midst of all these people and just to see him again. It's been a while.
I know. It's been a minute. I am so into Mindy Kaling right now. I've been rewatching Never Have I Ever, and it's such a great show. Speaking of rewatching, this news made my whole week that we have gotten word that there is going to be a Suits rewatch podcast. I'm guessing in the spirit of the Office rewatch podcast, and it will be co-hosted by Donna and Mike Ross, Patrick J. Adams, and Sarah Rafferty. I could not be more excited about this.
Like, you DM'd me immediately and was absolutely losing it.
I was so excited. And they're going to recap every episode and have guest stars from in front of the camera, behind the camera. Will Megan show up? Like, I mean, even if Harvey is there, I will just be so excited. It will be on Sirius XM, which I do not subscribe to. So I have to figure that out.
She is a pro podcaster. I mean, she has got to go on and be a guest.
Maybe
she
there could be a crossover, promote some ARO stuff. Like, I don't know, but I would be so excited and just can't wait. There's no date set yet. I'm just like chomping at the bit, but very fun news.
So exciting. Well, just a reminder before we close, please leave us a royal rating. This one is so lovely. This review this week. 5 stars. They say, wonderful host. The hosts are what make this podcast great. They're unbiased, respectful to all subjects and guests, and are a breath of fresh air each week with the positivity and focus on frivolous fun, which is what keeps me coming back. I need this weekly break to listen about clothes and royal engagements. It makes me happy for 20 to 40 minutes. I'm instantly in a better mood. I'm interested in the activities of the royal family, but couldn't really listen to any other royal podcast without getting bombarded by unwanted and unqualified personal commentary and speculation. I want to hear about the royals because it's a fun distraction, and these hosts give me exactly what I want. Wonderful ladies, wonderful. Oh, wow.
Wow. Pretty in power. Thank you so much. That means so much. That's a frame-worthy one for me. That's really kind.
It's really, really kind. Thank you guys for these wonderful reviews. Please subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast and send us an email, info@gallerypodcast.com. Until next week,
God save the pod.
The Majesties of Royally Obsessed have retired for this episode. God save the pod. And if you fancy the podcast, give Royally Obsessed the royal rating of 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at Royally Obsessed Podcast and join our Facebook group, Royally Obsessed. Royally Obsessed is a Gallery Podcast production.